Agency discussion of possible action relative to a second amendment to the joint powers authority that comprises ACRA. Ms. Towner, good morning.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Esteemed staff, how are you this morning? I've given you about six or seven rule changes or JPA changes that the Recreation Agency Board of Directors has adopted. And this is a trip around the county for me. I will be up in Volcano tonight with the same proposal. Basically, CSA number 3 has been removed. It's not a recreation purveyor per se. It's a service area for the county, but they didn't have any parks or public lands, and so that was removed. That change led to the governing board being reduced to 9 and reestablished the quorum number. In 4.5, the board of directors has not yet appointed an advisory board, and so the board of directors decided to change shall to may. In 6.3, it was removed. That was the year that the recreation agency was established, and the Board of Supervisors solely funded the first year. So that was also removed. And then 7.2 defines disposition of the ACRA assets. And the only pushback that I've gotten back on any of these changes with the City of Jackson, one of the councilmen said, is that all ACRA assets? And I just thought, well, yeah, but it's implied it's all ACRA assets. He kind of wanted a word change, and I just told him that that would take a whole lot of if we need that word change next time we come around with a third amendment, then we'll go ahead and go forward from that. But I assumed that ACRA assets meant all ACRA assets, and that there once if should, heaven forbid, ACRA cease to exist, that quite possibly all ACRA assets would be disposed of in a fair fashion. So those are, in a nutshell, that's the changes to the second amendment to the JPA.
Does it take unanimous consent to have these changes adopted?
Yes.
Of all the members.
Yeah.
Of all JPA members, yeah.
And to amend the...
The next time around, that's what I'd like to see changed, because I saw that on, Central Sierra, where they changed with the recent JPA amendments were that it was either two-thirds or 60% had to vote in favor of the changes. Of course, you have to have everybody adopt that first.
Yeah.
But the next time we do this procedure, as you said, there's another change that's being requested down the road.
I mean, I think what would happen under that scenario is that that entity that didn't want to agree to those changes would drop out of the group.
I could find two.
Are you sure it wasn't?
Wait a minute.
Richard, wait a minute. Are you sure it wasn't that at the ACRA board meeting they required 60% of the members to vote for adoption, but the boards that those members sit on all had to unanimously adopt the changes as the member entities?
Just like the ACTC, you have to have every entity adopted.
Right.
I believe, in Central Sierra that they lowered that threshold for changes to be made?
I think we all had to sign on to the changes to Central Sierra EDD and planning.
Could you do that, Greg? Could you lower the threshold?
I'm not sure if that was what was done in that on the Central Sierra agreement.
Even if it wasn't, could ACRA do that in the future?
Allow the JPA to be amended? Yes, I probably. However, I think what would happen is if it was amended to a term that one of the members disagreed with, they would just say, fine, go along without us, because that's not an agreement that we're going to go along with.
And that
the initial change would have to be unanimous.
To add that.
To make that right.
Future so change. In
there. What I see with some of these JPAs is they're hamstrung by one or two members. It would be much better to have it with even a two-thirds voting to change the actual agreements that are in place. So that's for down the road anyway. So
Okay.
Supervisor?
Yeah, I just had a question. On, oh, like the fourth bullet point, section 3.6, is they changed to 5 directors. And in there you got, oh, 6 and then parentheses 5. So just, this hasn't been cleaned up yet, or?
No, you did not get a clean copy. I apologize
okay.
for that. I kind of wanted you to see where the changes were.
Okay.
For me, it's easier to see where the changes are being made and pull the context out of it than rather than seeing a new change document and wondering now what was changed.
It'd be nice, really, if you had the cleaned up document.
All right.
Maybe redline what's going away.
Okay, that's fine. I'll do that in the future.
For it to be brought back?
No. I do see what you're referring to. The word 6 is still in there. It should be 5.
Well, there's that, and also section 6.3 is supposed to be removed. It's still in this document.
Okay.
So it kind of makes you wonder.
Yeah, I put the same thing down.
Yeah.
I just redlined it in.
We have. There's also removed. A typo.
Makes me wonder which document I sent you.
Also a typo frankly. In 7.2, property of owned by ACRA. This property of owned by ACRA.
Yeah, my final.
Supervisor Novelli.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Tracy, do we have something changing in 3.1 where it says, one, director shall be appointed by Volcano Community Service District, but need not be a member of the governing board?
That was a discussion at the agency meeting. It was not subsequently changed because, according to council, it's okay to have a director appointed by the governing board. And that particular language was still, it didn't weaken ACRA at all. So
I think our preference would be to have someone from their governing board, but under council's
yes.
advice, they're allowed to choose a designate.
Well, they're allowed to because the JPA specifically says they're allowed to. So the JPA agreement could require them, one, to all be members of the governing board of the representative entity, or it could allow that entity to just appoint a member, appoint a representative who's not a member of their governing board. So
they would have to agree to the change, correct?
Well, they would have to agree to the change.
No, the ACRA agency would have to agree to that change as a whole.
That's right? Correct. That is correct. That is correct.
Well, the ACRA board would have to present that forward to
would
each,
have to vote
to
on
each
that
entity.
Change.
Who,
right.
So you'd have to have 100% concurrence, which I'm not sure they would do.
Well, if
right.
they didn't, like Greg said, then they could drop out.
Well, my preference would be, I mean, I'm not so worried about being a member of the community service district, but they should be a member of the community.
I'm sorry.
In other words, live in Volcano.
Well, and the purpose of a JPA is so that the public is represented by their elected officials.
That's true.
And if there's voting members on a JPA that aren't elected by the public, you've kind of usurped the intent of a JPA by not having that provision.
Exactly, and what muddied up the discussion at the ACRA board meetings was the fact that JPAs do often have elected officials, such as yourself, appoint public members to sit in their place for some JPAs, and that was pretty much what was discussed at the ACRA board meeting, and they felt like, well, that's we can do that too, and actually that's not how this JPA is written at all.
Well, basically, the JPA document is controlling. So for every member entity except for Volcano, it has to be a member of that representative's governing board. So whether it's the school district or the city council or the county board of supervisors, it needs to be an elected official. For whatever reason, Volcano and CSA 3, which now no longer is a member, were allowed appointed members. And that's just the way it was drafted, and it is legal to grant that authority, and that's the way it was.
Okay, is it just as legal, though, Greg, for the agency, ACRA, to, as an entity, vote to make these amendments
and change that provision in the JPA agreements and then submit that JPA agreement to each member entity to vote on. And at that point, the one, if there's one member entity that doesn't agree with that change, they have two choices, either adopt it or drop out of the agency.
Essentially, that's what would happen if the ACRA board recommended changing this to say every member should be an elected official of the body that is a member. That would then be circulated, as is being done now, to the member entities. And if Volcano said, no, we want that to stay the same, you know, you can't really force them to sign it, but in effect, what would happen is ACRA would reform with one member less if everyone else agreed to that term.
Just as they're doing now with CSA 3. They're reforming with one member
yes.
less.
Okay, so is that, in essence, we would not approve this agreement then. We would be sending not approve based on we want that section changed.
Well, it's not up to us. It's a decision of the ACRA board.
That's correct.
On that.
So, what I'm hearing, though, is you don't want to agree to amend and adopt it the way it is.
I don't think that's my decision. Our decision. I think it's an ACRA board decision to bring that proviso forth, and then we either adopt the amendment or not.
But
they haven't done that.
The action for today is to approve the second amendment to the JPA, so you don't have any problem with that action?
I don't, because I feel that we're here to adopt what the ACRA board has put before us,
so
what the JPA board has put before
us. Is that a motion, then?
If you'd like it to be
public comment.
I'm trying to move this thing along.
Public comment.
Any other discussion here before we go to public comment? All right, any public comment on this? Any none?
I'll second that motion then.
No, I want to wait for the formal motion.
Okay. Oh, well, then I would move to adopt the Second Amendment to the Joint Powers Authority that comprises ACRA with the changes so stated.
Yep, I'll second that.
All right, moved and seconded to approve the Second Amendment to the JPA. Do you want anything in your motion about that section, or you want to just leave that up to the ACRA board then? As is.
I'm voting to adopt what the ACRA board has put before us.
All right.
If they failed to put something before us that they wanted, it's their problem.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 5-0. You might want to take that this discussion portions of it back to your board.
I'm certainly going to take this discussion portion back to the board. We'll talk about it in public matters tomorrow, and then I'll re-agendize it for the July meeting, and I may see you here in another couple of months with maybe perhaps another amendment.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good day.
We need to go to our public hearings that were scheduled for 10:30, so item 16, Planning Department discussion of possible action relative to a public hearing to consider and take action on the Planning Commission's recommendation to grant a request by Dennis Mickle, agent for William Schwanke and Gail Salsky for a zone change from AG Exclusive Agricultural District to R1A Single Family Residential District due to a boundary line adjustment. And who's taking this? Morning.
Morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This item was brought to us because of a survey on the Mickle property that revealed a dwelling that they own being partially on the adjoining property owners, the Swanky and Sealski's property. They agreed to sell a couple of acres to correct that encroachment, but presented the rezoning request to the Planning Commission so that the zoning on the Mickle property, once that boundary adjustment takes place, will be consistent. So we go from AG to R1A.
Any questions?
No, I don't have any. It looks pretty straightforward to me.
Then at this time, we'll open the public hearing. there any comments?
Make a motion to close the public hearing.
Moved by Supervisor Novelli, second by Supervisor Plaz.
Second.
Close the public hearing. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. And your action?
Well, I make a motion that we adopt the ordinance approving the zone change from Ag to R1A for the 2.21 acres to be adjusted by boundary line adjustment number 2013-002.
Greg, are we actually adopting the ordinance?
Or waiving the reading?
Reading. Adopting.
This is zoning ordinance is separate.
Zoning ordinances can be adopted without a...
Susan Grauble, Planning Director. Because the matter went to the Planning Commission, that's the reading of the ordinance, and it's an action for changing the zoning. So there is no, like, waiving the reading and then taking action at a following meeting for zone changes.
Under the adoption of the ordinance, would we need to... Did you cite conditions, too?
With the findings, Brian.
We need to cite the findings
did not.
By the Planning Commission?
Yes.
In the action of approving the zone change, you would it would be subject to the findings contained in the staff report. Yes.
With the findings.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Ornetto. Was there a second?
Second.
Moved, second by Supervisor Novelli. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Item 17, Planning Department, discussion of possible action relative to a public hearing to take action on the Planning Commission's recommendation to approve request by Linda Raymond for a variance from County Code Section 19.24.04, 25-foot setback requiring a 50-foot setback from center line of traveled roadbed to allow for the construction of a concrete block wall fence to within 10 feet of the property line.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I own a parcel of land directly across the Ridge Road from that, or I own an interest in a parcel of land. So as such, I'd like to recuse myself. And also, I guess you can get me when it comes to the next item, number 18, because I have a similar circumstance. So I'll go in the back and just be waiting back there.
Thank you again. Linda Raymond has asked.
Fine, just a second.
Let him get out.
Wait for our supervisor to clear. All right, go ahead.
All right, thank you. Ms. Raymond has asked for a variance from the front yard setback for in order to construct the concrete block wall. Had that been a normal fence, of course, it could have gone up to the property lines, but with it requiring a footing and the height of the wall, it's considered a structure, so it will require a variance. And Planning Commission and staff recommend that you approve the resolution to approve the variance subject to the findings and conditions that are in the staff report.
Is this wall going to be more of a safety item than a decor?
It's primarily for noise reduction.
Doesn't like the road noise, obviously. And obviously it has to be an engineered wall since it's over 5 feet.
Yeah.
Doesn't create any liability situation for the county that will get sued down the road if somebody runs into this wall?
Public Works reviewed it and didn't have any objection, technical objections to its approval.
So it would be on that frontage road, right? No?
It's on Ridge Road.
It's on Ridge Road.
It's on Ridge Road itself, right below Surrey Junction.
Okay.
Right below.
Gotcha.
Across from Running Gold.
Gotcha. Yeah. Exactly. I wasn't quite sure where it was.
Junction.
No, sorry. Not Surrey.
No, not
Running Gold.
Running Gold. I said Surrey at first.
Okay. Any further questions? We'll open the public hearing at this time. Is there any comment? Hearing none.
Make a motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
Moved and seconded to close the public hearing. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 4-0-1 with one recusal. And now your action.
Make a motion to... Let's see. I'll make a motion to adopt... the variance for Linda Raymond on the 25-foot setback.
Under resolution.
Give me a chance to read it first, please.
Resolution approving the variance.
Want to adopt the resolution
for the 25-foot setback requiring a at 12995 Ridge Road, and the resolution number
It's not numbered, but.
Resolution 13-whatever the numbers would be. And any findings?
Findings and conditions from.
Findings and. There's three findings and two conditions. three conditions, correct, Susan?
Yeah.
Correct, Chuck?
Correct.
Right. Some Chuck right there, not that Chuck.
Motion is to adopt the resolution approving the variance and the approve the with the findings and conditions. So with that, is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. All opposed. Motion carries 401. Now, go on to item 18. Supervisor Onetto will want to come back here?
No, not on this. He, same condition.
I believe he owns property near an applicant, not where the sign is located itself, but adjacent to an applicant. So he's recused himself.
All right. Record. Let the record show that Supervisor Onetto is recused on this issue. And item 18, discussion of possible action relative to a public hearing to consider take action on a request for the finding that the sign provides directional information about publicly or privately owned natural phenomena, history, cultural, scientific, educational, and religious sites and areas of natural scenic beauty are naturally suited for outdoor recreation, deemed to be of outstanding interest of the traveling public, and must be nationally or regionally known to apply for a Caltrans permit for an off-site private directional sign, and B, to consider and take action on the Planning Commission's recommendation to approve a request by Weston Consortium for a variance from County Code Section 19.32.010J requiring directional signs to be no larger than 10 square feet to allow the directional sign for wineries in the west end of the county to be no larger than 30 square feet. The projected yes, it should be the project is located on the north side of Highway 16 east of the DeMartini Road, Carbondale Road intersection in the Plymouth area.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Susan Grohall, the planning director. The West End Consortium, which is comprised of a group of wineries located in the Willow Creek and Latrobe areas, is applying through the county and the state for the necessary permits to allow them to place an off-site directional sign at the north side of the of Highway 16. In the DeMartini Carbondale Road area. An application was made with the Planning Department for a quasi-public directional sign use permit as well as a variance application in order to exceed the 10-square-foot maximum that's allowed by county code. The original application was for two double-sided signs. One was 10 by 20 feet and one was 5 by 10 feet in size. After conversations with the outdoor advertising section of Caltrans, the applicant revised the request to that of a single sign, double-sided, but 150 square feet in size. They modified the wording slightly so that it was a little more directional in nature. These were made in order to more aptly comply with the Caltrans limitations for private directional signs. The Planning Commission heard the proposal at their March 12th meeting. The Commission directed the applicant to come back with options or an option that would meet the desires and concerns and thoughts that the Commission expressed during their hearing that night. A copy of the minutes of that meeting are included in your staff report for reference. The consortium came back with an amended application changing the size of the sign from 150 square feet to 100 square feet and then proposing to change the sign copy from wineries Nick's Three Rights with an arrow on one side of the sign to say wine tasting Nick's Three Rights and an arrow. The other side of the sign, which would be the west, would be for westbound traffic, was proposed to change from Serafina Latrobe Road with an arrow to Winery Latrobe Road and an arrow. The commission reviewed the revised request on April 9th, and they approved a conditional use permit and recommended approval of the variance to the board for a 30-square-foot double-sided quasi-public directional sign, and they modified the use permit request to restrict the sign copy on the sign to only say wineries on both sides of the sign instead of wine tasting and Serafina or winery, as was proposed in the application. So one side of the sign will say wineries, Nick's Three Rights, and an arrow, and then the other side would say wineries, Latrobe Road, and an arrow. And that was changed because there are now two wineries on Latrobe Road. The commission staff reports and minutes are included in your packet, and they also provide some more details and some mock-ups of the signs that were proposed. Because the sign location is along a highway, a state highway, a permit is also required from Caltrans, and the category of sign allowed under the state's Outdoor Advertising Act is considered a private directional sign. In order to submit an application for this type of sign to Caltrans, the applicant must include in that application from the local jurisdiction written confirmation that the activity to be advertised is nationally or regionally known and is of outstanding interest to the traveling public. This written confirmation must be a letter, resolution, or other official document made by the public agency who exercises jurisdiction over the sign, and in this case, that's the Board of Supervisors. Additionally, the Federal Highway Administration regulations, which the State Department of Transportation must implement in their permit issuance, defines a directional sign as signs containing directional information about public places owned or operated by federal, state, or local governments or their agencies, publicly or privately owned natural phenomena, historic, cultural, scientific, educational, or religious sites, and areas of natural scenic beauty or naturally suited for outdoor recreation deemed to be in the interest of the traveling public. Further, those federal regulations set the selection method and criteria for directional signs as one being privately owned activities or attractions eligible for directional signing are limited to the following: natural phenomena, scenic attractions, historic, educational, cultural, scientific, and religious sites, and outdoor recreation uses. Two, to be eligible, privately owned attractions or activities must be nationally or regionally known and of outstanding interest to the traveling public. And third, each state shall develop specific selection methods and criteria to be used in determining whether or not an activity qualifies for this type of signing. A statement as to the selection methods and criteria shall be furnished to the Secretary of Transportation before the state permits erection of any such signs under this section. So these are regulations that the state must implement in their authorizing any permits that, they may issue subject to their regulations. In 2006, a similar request was made by Stephen Fairchild, if some of you will remember, for the Sutter Gold Mine tours. And at that time, staff expressed concern regarding the potential impacts of making this kind of finding that would have on the ability that for the county to regulate the location of signs advertising the mine along state and county roads. County Council also at that time indicated that this determination would need to be reviewed by for CEQA compliance to determine what the environmental impacts would be by having signs placed around the county. And in your packet, I attached information from that previous request from 2006. And the board at that time declined to make that finding. There are also many other businesses that could make this same request to enable them to pursue permits for directional signage. Also, if the board makes this finding, staff has the question of would this apply to only these wineries or would it apply unilaterally to all wineries in the county? We're not sure that the board can make that finding for only some wineries and then not all wineries, but maybe they can. If that were the case, this could result in more requests from other businesses throughout the county for this finding and or more requests for off-site directional signage along our state highways for wineries if, in fact, the finding applies to all wineries. You do have a letter that was received, I believe, yesterday from Brad and Zamina Pearson. I believe it was emailed directly to each supervisor as well as the board clerk, and I passed it on to county council as well.
I have this letter in my packet. Oh,
there was a letter that they submitted to the Planning Commission, and then there was another one that was sent yesterday.
Very, very similar.
Probably, but...
Yeah, it's almost the same letter.
Okay. Well, I believe the points are the same, but he took exception with a couple of things.
Do they live at the property they claim to own out there, or do they live in Shingle Springs where their address on the letter says?
I don't know. He claims they can see this from their kitchen window. So there apparently is...
But then it was signed to Shingle Springs on their letter.
Yes, the address. Well, is it a P.O. box or is it a site address? No, it's a site address. Yes. No, I know. I don't know the answer to that. So there is a letter of opposition from Mr. and Mrs. Pearson. For staff recommendations, for the reasons that I've mentioned above or previously, the staff recommends the board decline to make the findings necessary to pursue a permit with this, for a sign permit with the State Department of Outdoor Advertising. In the event that the board does adopt the findings, staff recommends that the findings be specific as to which wineries the findings apply to, just these or all wineries in the county, which, if that is done, as I said earlier, would
just
I would
wineries
expect.
Wineries are all businesses.
Pardon?
Just wineries are all businesses.
Well, it would have to be specific to an activity if you read the state.
Well, I have read the state, and I... Harken back to the days when Plaza's Resort wanted a sign along a state highway and meets the requirements of just about every statement in the in the state's guidelines and were denied. So when it comes to cultural and outdoor recreation and areas of natural scenic beauty and all those other things, you got to start expanding this provision then to all businesses and not
One of the things with Plaza's Resort, I believe, was that it was on federal land also, the location, the sign location at the intersection.
We also applied for it to be on privately
state,
owned land.
On privately owned land.
That's a tragedy.
Right.
You know.
But anyway, this would have to be for an activity. So you'd have to identify what that activity is. And then that would... then make that resolution available or that finding available for any of those businesses to approach Caltrans for a permit for their signs along state highways.
Susan, I have a question. Was these two wineries in business when we had our wine ordinance committee meet for years and years and...
This application,
about the signage and
yeah,
all that
this
stuff.
Application is for was originally five wineries, and I'm assuming it's still the same five wineries that are on Highway 49, Latrobe Road, and Willow Creek area. They were part of the original Vintners Association application, but if you recall, when Ms. Lubenko was here before us, she ran into this issue with Caltrans as to what Caltrans would allow for signage along the highway, and what they were proposing at the time wasn't in conformance with what Caltrans required. They were talking about the TOD, I can't think of the name, tourism? I don't remember, TOD signs they call them, and they're blue signs.
TOT?
No, TOD, and I can't remember what that stands for now off the top of my head. But they were blue, and they're limited in size and limited to what they can say. They could say wineries with an arrow. I believe they could say, like, three wineries, and it can also say, you know, three wineries, 2 miles, or something like that. But the sign copy, the wording on the sign is very limited. And at that time, the Vintners Association, for whatever reason, elected to drop those signs on state highways from their request, and they went forward with just the signs that were along county roads, and they've implemented those. So this group of wineries, and Mr. McMaster and Mr. Tannis are here, and so is Suzanne Kreitzer. They're three of the wineries. And I'm sorry, I don't know the other gentleman. Oh, Serafina, correct? I'm sorry, Serafina. Representative from Serafina is here. I'm sure they can speak to why they're doing this. But the the vintners chose not to pursue this and went forward with just the ones on county roads, so they're here today.
Okay.
Then I would what I would prefer to do today is take one item and then the next. So if you want to take the public comment on the sign or the finding for the state permit, and then from there we can go to the variance, unless you choose to do otherwise. We can do it either way, but
okay.
Wouldn't we be best to look at the variance first to see? Don't grant the variance, then that pretty much ends it right there, right?
No, if you grant the variance, you have to...
If we do not grant the variance.
Oh, if you don't grant the variance, that would end it, correct. Or if you don't grant the finding, there would be no purpose in granting the variance.
Right.
So, either way.
Okay.
It's
all right. Any more questions for Susan? All right. We'll allow the applicants to come up and present. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, supervisors. My name is Mark McMaster, and I own New Adair Vineyards, and I'm one of the five wineries that are part of this. On the federal side of the rules, the state of Virginia adopted a sign program that for going wine tasting within their state, get a general idea of where the wine tasting could take place along their major highways. So they were able to find a way to comply with the federal rules. Now, California does not have a similar rule. So we get into this other part where it's, you know, locally, regionally known, and we're kind of operating from the assumption that wine tasting in Amador County is regionally and nationally known activity. I believe that we comply, you know, with that rule within Caltrans. Brought up about the TODS signs, tourism oriented destination signs, TOD for short. There's only one winery of the five that qualify for that, because there are restrictions on how many hours you have to be open, about 40 hours a week, 5 days a week. You can only place it on the highway closest to where your winery is. You cannot place it, if your winery's on a highway, then it cannot be on another highway pointing to you on the highway. The only winery that qualified under those provisions was Tanis Vineyards, one on Highway 124. And on the letter that was sent, they're talking about seeing a sign from their kitchen window. The application places a sign in a far different location than the sign that's currently out there, because Caltrans has rules that the sign has to be at least 2,000 feet from any one of their... Have any other questions?
Have you spoken to the people that sent in the letter and the Pearsons? Have you spoken to them at all?
No, I don't know who they are. I see the letter that came in the other day.
You know if they appeared at the Planning Commission meeting?
They did not.
Yeah, they used to own Kit Carson Lodge for a lot of years. Pearson's? Yeah. Braddon's, I mean.
Brad. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yeah. The one comment was made during the, I'd have to go back through all the notes, but during the Planning Commission, one of the Planning Commission hearings, that the requirement could be met by going with the standard size sign, and therefore you could move it closer to the highway. Do you think it would still be invisible to people as they're driving by? if that were the case?
We would, well, getting close to the highway would be encroaching into Caltrans right-of-way. They were about 100 feet off of the center line. That's why they went from, they allowed, put the variance of 30 square feet. It's so far off the highway.
For any size sign, it's 34 feet?
No, well, your regs have the, for directional sign, it's limited to 10 square feet. Bring it up, since the sign would be placed so far off the highway, our variance request is to take it up to at least 30 square feet. Viable. Because it's right on the north side, I don't know how wide Caltrans right-of-ways are, but the highway's on the south side of that right-of-way, and so there's a great deal of land for, I guess, them to expand if they wanted to go four lanes north side, and the sign is proposed to be quite a ways off the road.
Other questions? Thank you. Susan, one question on that point that we just discussed. I thought it said somewhere in here that was mentioned by staff that they could go with a standard size sign and bring it closer to the highway?
I don't know. Don't believe that was from staff. It was a question that was asked
by a planning commissioner.
Yeah, it was asked by a commissioner. Couldn't it be located closer to the fence line? The sign is set back. I believe it was at 20 or 30 feet.
34 feet.
And what was articulated, if I recall correctly, and Mr. McMaster can correct me, but the landowner requested that they have that because they like to do the fire break, and they want to be able to get equipment around it. So that was their reason for putting it back a bit. The only question I would have is, and I don't know, maybe Mr. McMaster could clarify this, is he mentioned that the current location of the sign is not where it will end up because of Caltrans regulations. And so if he has an idea of where it is that same distance applicable to the location where he anticipates it to be located pursuant to Caltrans's requirements, since I'm not exactly sure where that is going to be.
Mr. McMaster, since we just heard the question, might be a good time to try and answer it now.
Probably be about, I'm guessing, but approximately 500 feet to the east from where there's currently a sign out there that's on a trailer. That sign would actually, you're not going to remember this. If you look at the parcel really close, they've got a cross fence that's further east, and it would be, and there's a little hill there, and that sign would then move to be kind of on top of that fence, on top of that knoll, and at that fence line, and that would put it Caltrans requirements from either end.
When would the other signs come down? About how long do you think it would take to get these new signs up if they were approved?
I would probably take the sign builder, you know, maybe a month to get the new one up.
I think the condition was within 6 months of the other ones coming down.
It was immediately after the planning commission.
Some were immediate.
One of them.
Some were immediate, and it said some were 6 months.
Right. The large sign that was up, there were two signs that were up. There was a 10 by 20 and this other sign that's still there, which is 150.
No, it's 50.
The current one is 50? Oh, it's 50. Correct. It's right. 5 by 10. Correct. The 200-square-foot sign was required to come down immediately, and it was taken down by the middle of May, if I remember correctly, per the agreement. There are also the white picket signs that have been put up on the corner of Willow Creek and down at 124 in Willow Creek, 16 in Willow Creek and 124 in Willow Creek. And they've been there, and those signs, as well as the existing 50-square-foot sign, are to be removed within 6 months of the Planning Commission's hearing or whenever this is resolved, whichever comes first. So it was to give them enough time to get through the Caltrans permitting process in the event that this is approved by the board. Because if this is approved by the board today, they still have to go through Caltrans's permitting process, and they wanted to give them enough time to get through that before they had to take down the 50-square-foot sign. So right now the only signs out there are the 50-square-foot sign on the north side of the highway and the two white picket signs that have been there for several years without permits. But those would have to come down regardless of whether this is granted or not, that needs to come down. Those need to be come down.
Sure, 6 months is going to be long enough for Caltrans permitting process?
I talked to Caltrans, and they indicated that if there is a prompt application, that should be plenty of time.
Thank you. Other questions? Hearing none, we'll open the public hearing at this time and ask for any comments. Hearing none.
Make a motion to close public hearing.
Second.
Moved and seconded to close public hearing. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 401. And now we'll take up whatever you want to do first, board members, A or B, the permit application to Caltrans or the variance request.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we should take the variance, but, you know, we had a few years ago, this issue with Sutter Gold mine came up, and unfortunately for me, I had to step down due to potential conflict of interest, so I really don't know a whole lot about what went on with that, but it appears that if we grant a special variance, then we could have some real sign pollution going on in the county with other activities, so that's a concern. Maybe I should address that to Susan or planning. You know, when Sutter Gold came before us, you know, I stepped down to potential conflict of interest.
Right.
My family
right.
members worked there, and my concern is if we grant a special variance to this, then we could open up the floodgate essentially for sign pollution and be hard to turn down other people for this type of signage.
That is, you know.
Unless we can grant us, you know, specific.
Well, that is a concern that staff has, and, you know, and council may tell you and probably would tell you that each of your actions are independent and individual, and that they may not be precedent setting, but as you gentlemen know, sitting there, it becomes very difficult when you have one business granted a privilege, and then another one comes, or anybody, whether it be a private citizen or a business, but if somebody comes in and asks for a special dispensation and receive it, and then someone else comes in either with an identical situation or something very similar, it's hard. It is a concern that staff has, because where do you stop? Where do you find that, you know, the Daffodil Hill isn't something that's unique and regionally known, and then they can go and get how many signs for direction to get the Daffodil Hill, the Jackson Rancheria. We went through this several years ago when they were wanting to put signage up, and if I recall correctly, the board worked with Caltrans very closely as to what could be placed on those signs and how many and where, and because there was concern that they would be, you know, pretty much at every intersection.
As to what can go on the signs, there are a lot of the real estate signs that direct people to Castle Oaks.
That's a different category of sign.
And so they're allowed to put whatever they want on there specific to real estate?
Well, it's a different category of sign, and that's a question, and I have talked to the state outdoor advertising section, and those signs are becoming a concern to them as well. They've been getting complaints. So that's a different category. I don't really want to kind of go down that path because it is a different category, but there's.
Did the county approve those?
No. No, they did not.
Oh, they didn't have to get county approval?
They were put up with the understanding from the county that they are exempt from local regulation.
You know, and it's starting to concern me as you come up the Highway 16 corridor, you're seeing more and more billboard-type signs on trailers and whatnot, and I know some have been removed now, but it is a concern, and unpermitted,
yes.
By the way.
Yes.
These signs are going to be very plain in nature, though. They're not going to have any, I understand, not have the names of the wineries on there. Just be generic, correct?
That's what was approved by the commission, yes. And if there's any substantial change as a requirement of Caltrans's requirements, then it would have to come back to the Planning Commission. But in talking to the State Outdoor Advertising Section, what was approved by the Planning Commission appears at this point to be acceptable to them if that were to be submitted to them. So, yes, it's directional at this point.
My question would be, should we be more specific and put the names of the wineries on there?
And that's where you start getting outside the realm of directional in Caltrans's perspective.
But in one instance, on one side of the sign, there is a Serafina's name on it, correct?
It is today, but that wasn't what was approved by the commission. They will have to change that to say Wineries, Latrobe Road, with an arrow.
My point
is, the name will have to come off.
Would be to council, but is that we're granting them a special privilege if we put their names on it? I don't want a bunch of sign pollution, and I don't want to, I want to kind of keep it in check. And I thought if you were more specific to the names, then you're not granting them a special privilege or to other people that would come in, you could kind of keep it in check that way. I don't know if I'm making sense.
Well, there's the two parts of this. One is the findings that you have to make under Caltrans, which presumably would apply to a broader range of at least all other similarly situated wineries. So that would be a broad action. The variance, depending on how you articulate the finding and why you're granting a variance, of the road, the distance from the highway, things like that, those would set parameters if you got another. Arguably they would apply to other applicants as well. But
the only thing is that if we start changing the sign face, the sign copy, is that was not what the
Planning Commission
granted by the use permit. And the use permit is not before you today because there was no appeal filed of the conditions of that use permit. So what's only before you today is the variance. So that's
and
only to do with
finding.
The size.
Okay. And making
the Caltrans finding, yes, which doesn't have really anything to do with what the sign says at this point.
No, but to my understanding anyway, we would then, because it's directional and not specific to a named business, to Supervisor Bortano's point, that we'd be making a finding that wineries and or wine tasting are of outstanding interest
to the traveling public.
The traveling public,
and are regionally are nationally known, and all those other findings. Yes.
Now, I'm sure they would rather have their names on them, but if the Caltrans rules don't allow that, and if they're generic, and if they can live with that, I don't think I have a problem approving it.
Yeah, I understand that. So if anybody else come in and say I had a radiator shop, I just put radiator shop 2 miles. That generic enough for you?
Any other discussion?
Just don't want to open up the floodgate. This has some potential.
I tend to agree, Supervisor Bortano. I see a lot of criteria here that I'm not sure I'm finding that these businesses rise to the level of as stated, at least in the FHA and state regulations. I can think of a whole host of other businesses that do so as well. So I think it speaks to the potential for a lot more variance requests coming forward.
If you, being that they have to be within such a somewhat of a proximity to the applicant's businesses, under the finding number 3 from the Planning Commission, they talk about the specific reason for it because of the traveling public not being able to see the signage because of their speed limit on the highway. I find that somewhat compelling as an argument.
That's for granting the variance.
That's right.
Not to make the finding, though.
Correct. There's two things before you. There's the finding for the state sign application, and then there's the variance to allow them to go to the 30 square feet which exceeds the 10 square foot maximum allowed by county code. So there's there are two different things.
But they're married to each other, basically, though.
Well, yes and no. They're not going to be able to complete the process without both of them. But as far as the findings for the variance, that doesn't have anything to do with the finding that you're making for the state permit.
Satisfy Caltrans' requirements, yeah.
So there's one set of criteria or the evaluation for the sign permit finding for Caltrans has to do with whether the attraction or the activity that's being that the traveling public is being directed to meets all of those criteria. The nationally, regionally known, outstanding interest of traveling public, cultural resources, all those things. That's one thing. And then that kind of is whether they are going to be able to have a sign with the state. And then the variance is more to do with the county code.
I understand that, but without a Caltrans approval, they won't get the variance approved anyway. It's null and void.
So that's correct.
My thing is, do we want... I do have a concern that we could end up with much more of this in the county, but I think those findings under the variance are important, though, to explain why this is being done, too. These wineries were outside of the previously enacted ordinance, and they need to succeed somehow as businesses. Without the directional signage, I think that makes it very difficult.
I don't know, I kind of like the sign that's there right now, the one that they have to take down. It kind of fits in with the the ones up in the valley, to be honest with you.
Well, it's just this,
but, I
mean, this argument
and
was
I understand.
By the
understand.
By the strings, the Italian place, that without that any little bit of additional signage out there, you may not get those customers in.
Well, the only thing is, I don't want to hurt a business, but I don't want to open Pandora's box either. And I understand, especially sitting on the wine ordinance committee for as many years as we met, or as many months as we met for. But I kind of like the directional, just a directional sign, just what it says. Still can't figure out if we're going to go 30, why don't we just go 50? I mean, did the Planning Commission
put a billboard up there?
Did the Planning Commission hear 50 at all?
Did they what?
Did they hear 50 square feet?
Yes, that was the final, I believe, the final request. Anyway, the Commission's feeling on that, and again, that isn't before you. The 30 feet is what's before you. To change it to 50 would have to go back through the hearing process. They couldn't find that it was a minor increase in land use regulation or restriction, which it has CEQA implications. And the other was that the signs that were permitted for the wineries in the Shenandoah Valley, the maximum size sign that was permitted there, I believe, was 32 square feet, and they felt that size sign was appropriate and was set kind of, again, as a kind of a precedent. Here we go, they were tying it to what had been permitted elsewhere, so they felt that was in keeping and that they could make those findings that were required for the variance, which is that you're not granting a special privilege, and to these users, because they're not property owners, that isn't granted or available for identical users. And then the other part of it was the CEQA issue, which is to be categorically exempt from CEQA, it has to be a minor alteration or deviation from a land use restriction. And so they felt that when you started getting into the 50 to 100 square foot range, that was not a minor change, because 10 feet to 30 feet, they could make that justification, but 10 feet to 50 feet, they didn't. They didn't feel that was something they could do, and that would require CEQA review, either in a negative declaration or an EIR.
Would it be a CEQA review or an EIR if we made them take it off the trailer and mount it on the ground?
No. They're going to have to take it off the trailer if this goes forward.
If this is not approved, do the other signs come down anyway?
When you say the other signs?
Are the ones that are on the trailers with
no non-permitted signs?
They are those. The signs, the big one has come down. The one that is still there is illegal and would have to be removed if this is not granted. The white picket signs are unpermitted as well, and they need to come down as well or get a permit. But I don't, from my understanding, based on what we're going through with this, they would not be able to get a permit from Caltrans for those. So they would have to come down.
All right, board members.
All right, well, I'll make a motion that we deny the variance because I cannot make the findings required for the outdoor state advertising permit.
Moved and second to deny the variance, so item B. And any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Chair will vote nay. Motion is denied. Motion fails, or motion is approved. 3-1-1 to deny. And that would that necessitate action on the other item?
For the variance, we would just to close it out. The recommendation from the Planning Commission would need to be taken forward, and a motion on the variance request would need to be made.
Well, as I understand,
that's what it just was.
Oh, variance? Was on the variance.
Oh, I'm sorry. So the finding, you need
the motion was to deny the variance.
To deny the variance. So for the permit application, would that need to be acted on?
Those were kind of combined. The motion was deny the variance because the Caltrans findings couldn't be made.
Yeah, that was right. Okay.
Voice or want the regular.
So that should.
Oh, Greg, do we need to take specific action on the first item then? Item A?
I believe you've rolled it together with the variance.
As long as you feel that the motion covers both of them, that's fine. But I would like just the understanding that both of them have been acted on today.
That.
Restate it if you want it.
I'd like to say that resolves this issue, but it at least takes care of it today. So thank you. And at this time, could we get Supervisor Arnetto back in?
What are you going to take next?
We're going to go ahead and prior to lunch, because I know there's some people waiting for specific items, we're going to take item 8, and then item 9, and then item 14 on the budget. So, we'll wait for Supervisor Arnetto.
Well, we'll trade because on item 8, I've just will remain consistent and recuse myself from decisions regarding rates with Aces Waste Services because my son is directly employed by them.
All right. If you find Supervisor Arnetto, could you direct him this way?
You want me to call him?
Mother had the same problem.
Brian.
You have any jokes you want to tell?
Craig?
What?
Are you there?
Find Brian. Yeah.
All right, here we go. Item 8, Community Development Agency Waste Management, discussion of possible action relative to implementation of refuse rate adjustments to include rate reductions in all three franchise areas and the Buena Vista Transfer Station. Tim?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Jim McCargue, Solid Waste Program Manager.
Morning.
Morning. In your packet of information with this agenda item, you have a memo for today's meeting and three attachments. The three attachments are the R3 Consulting Group letter report, review of ACE's rate year 6 indexed rate adjustment, and then attachment B is the rate adjustment methodology guidelines that we use when evaluating annual rate adjustments. And then attachment C is information on the refuse rate index, which is the five separate indices that comprise the refuse rate index. This item has been discussed and addressed at two administrative committee meetings for the board, both on May 6th and on May 20th. There was some question as to what specifically comprised the labor and salaries component of the refuse rate index, and again, that's attachment C. There's even a link to the BLS website where more information can be obtained there, and then also there's an excerpt in the memo down at the bottom of the first page of the memo that discusses, I think, in maybe too much detail what's in there, but it does give you the whole picture. So again, as I said, this item has been addressed at two administrative committee meetings, and there were recommendations that came from the committee to this board, which are to implement the rate adjustments as they have been determined by the R3 report. And those are specifically for Franchise Area 1, it's a negative 1.65%. For Franchise Area 2, it's a negative 1.31%. For Franchise Area 3, it's a negative 2.30%. For the Pine Grove Transfer Station, that's a positive 0.13%. And for the Buena Vista Transfer Station, it's a negative 1.40%. This is the first year that we've ever had rate decreases in all three subscription franchise areas. I think what we're seeing is now that we've used this rate adjustment methodology over the course of 6 years now, we're seeing kind of a right-sizing or correcting of rates that is due in large part, actually, to the ACE's purchase of the business down in Franchise Area 1 and the Buena Vista Transfer Station. ACE's operational efficiencies and their economies of scale have allowed for rates to be come up negative. And so based upon our analysis and our consultant R3's analysis and input from the ACE's accountant, Mr. Paul Tidma, we in Waste Management Public Works Department have a high level of confidence with this methodology, and we believe that it's a very fair and equitable way to adjust rates to the ratepayers. Thank you.
We discuss the possibility of rolling this over and averaging it into the future rate, possible rate increases in the future. And I think the committee was satisfied that we should go ahead and adopt these decreases, because if people earn the increase, they get the increase. If they earn the decrease, they get the decrease. It would be nice if those people in the community that fight so hard against any rate increase would be here to, if they consider themselves advocates for rates, if they would be here to listen to this discussion also, to see that it is a fair process.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was wondering where they're at.
They want to pick the low-hanging fruit is what it comes down to. So, but this is a very good process, Jim. We worked on this, what, five years ago? Adopted the RAM about 4 years ago, right?
7 years ago. Because this is our sixth year of using the system.
But I think we did that because we got tired of basically using a process that no one really understood how it worked, and it was, and that just took a lot of the fairness out of it. So I think we needed to get down to a process where we had some concrete methodology on paper in order to give people a sense of fairness that their rates were being adjusted up or down correctly.
Yeah, the prior to using the rate adjustment methodology, which, by the way, it starts off with a very thorough and detailed review of the expenses and the revenues of the garbage company, and we set a base year, and then we use these refuse rate indices, which you're looking at today. So, prior it was kind of very unpredictable, and I think what we found is this method becomes much more predictable because it's a straightforward, systematic approach to adjusting rates.
And I guess the beauty of all of this is we don't have to take a 218 vote to go down.
No, we do not.
And that's an expense. And, the beauty of this is it lets people know that this is a good system and it does work and it is fair. It's just taken us a while to get there, but I feel good about it.
Any other comments?
I feel good, and I'm glad it came before the admin committee to discuss it also, and I think it's the right thing to do so that the public doesn't come up constantly saying, well, why are we allowing a rate increase? It's a vice versa door, so.
Now, a question, we have that one increase. That's not going to trigger 218, would it?
No, because that's at the Pine Grove Transfer Station. It's not a mandatory subscription type service. Although on that topic, I think Mr. Molinelli might have a comment.
Mr. Molinelli.
He wants to lower that one, too?
Paul Molinelli, Senior Aces Waste Services, and I guess I'm the low-hanging fruit, by the way.
I don't think you're hanging that low.
We are in total accord with the process, but at the Pine Grove Transfer Station, we are not going to implement the increase. It is so minor. We jokingly say have the signs changes would probably absorb whatever increase. So we're going to leave those the same.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for doing that.
I'll be a little more specific on low-hanging fruit. I was talking specifically about Sutter Creek.
And, I know. I understand.
And the rate overturns there. So, on the 218 process, so
it is a concern.
Well, the people in Sutter Creek come around, wanted to talk to me, and I said,
"All right,
I can't talk to you folks. You better hit the road."
Paul, anything else?
That's it.
All right, thank you. Thanks for hanging around so long. I hope you learned something. So. All right, on this item, we're being asked to approve the refuse rate adjustments.
So moved.
Second. Moved and seconded to approve the refuse rate adjustments as they've been presented, with the understanding from ACES that they're not going to implement the Pine Grove Transfer Station 0.13% increase. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries 4-0-1. And that will bring Supervisor Platt.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just say one thing. I wanted to mention that recently we hosted the Northern California Household Hazardous Waste meeting in this room, and because the chairman and the vice chairman were busy, I think, with CSAC meetings, Paul Molinelli Sr. was the keynote speaker, and I just wanted to publicly acknowledge that he did a tremendous job for speaking at this very important meeting in place of the chairman and vice chairman who were away.
We heard,
thank you.
At our last RA meeting, we heard good things about Paul, too, and the presentation that he made. So you still have your chance someday, Paul, to go even higher.
Get a Golden Globe.
All right. Thank you. With that, we'll go on to item 9, Proposition 172, expenditures, discussion and possible action relative to ratification of the following Prop 172, acceptable expenditures approved by the Amador Fire Protection Authority, paid personnel, volunteer personnel, training, turnouts, and personal protective equipment, radios, and communications, and fire department safety equipment. Mr. Herfel.
Yes, I'm Jake Herfel. We were asked to clarify what these monies would be used for. There's some discussion that maybe they weren't being used right. So the full board agreed upon this and asked to present it to the supervisors for your approval or guidance so you know where the monies are going when we get some monies.
Chief McCart, do you have anything you want to say on this before we...
Well, Mr. Herbel just made a statement that I'd like him to clarify, actually.
Yes.
He said, if we get some monies. So it's been my understanding
We have some monies in our accounts right now that have built up for some of us over the years.
Right.
So this will clarify that money, and it will clarify any money that may come in the future.
Okay. That's not the way I envision
what,
it.
But. What we spend it on. We added the AFPA board added that last caveat there, fire department safety equipment. Before, that wasn't on it.
But that's my point, Ted, is this it uses the term ratification. Well, the monies that are in the various districts' accounts right now that they can say these monies came from Prop 172 monies from the county, we've already given that money.
Yes.
To those districts. They already have it. So for us to ratify how they're expending it, it's kind of a closing the barn door after the cows are out, basically.
Okay.
But to take the stance that we're ratifying what we deem to be eligible expenses for potential future distributions of Prop 172 county general fund monies, I think is something that should be discussed if and when the time comes that we take the stance to distribute Prop 172 monies out to seven different districts within the county. Not what monies have already been given.
Right. I see what you're saying.
I can concur with both you and Chief that is here, but what I'm saying is the reason why we brought this before this board is because we added that caveat, fire department safety equipment. All the rest were on the expenditure list for 172 prior to what you're reading right here right now.
But whose expenditure list for Prop 172? AFPA's? They created one as to how they might spend the monies fire, they currently have?
The fire entities that are represented by AFPA.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So they already have money from the county and Prop 172. They agree amongst themselves how that money is to be spent in the form of an expenditure list. Fine. That doesn't involve this board anymore. But what might involve this board is how future monies are spent if this board decides to allocate future Prop 172 monies. And we haven't for the last 2 years, and I'm not sure that there's a plan to do so into the future.
Well, what might involve this board more is if steps towards consolidation don't proceed a bit quicker than they have been. I kind of agree. I don't know if we have a whole lot to say so where the Prop 172 monies that we give them are spent.
Well, I agree. Paid personnel, but does included in paid personnel, does that include administrative cost?
Under Major M, it included administration. It did not include buying a fire truck or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and we at the JPA meetings, we discussed where the money is spent, and we recently turned down a couple of people because they felt it didn't follow any of the guidelines. So the money's in the past or in the accounts is discussed, and we try to follow the guidelines that we feel were set up for us both by the boards in the past and by Major M. And we just it was mentioned to us that we were not clear enough that with a guideline that we should come before the supervisors and tell you what our guidelines are, so you understood what we were doing. And we're not asking for more money. I've said that one with my statement. I didn't mean to. We always ask for more money, but I mean,
we've noticed.
I mean, we understand you have full control of 172. But it was mentioned to us by some of the people that come to our meetings that we weren't clear on where that money was could be used. So that's what we're trying to clarify.
Right. And I appreciate you coming to the meeting and seeking the clarification. And I think that what's frustrating to, at least to me, is, you know, we've had a couple of fire needs task force recommendations coming down for consolidation. Fast forward here, coming up on 22 years, not a whole lot's been done towards that, so it is a little bit frustrating. And so I think if there's a message to take back to the FPA board is that this board, at least I am, looking for the start of consolidation.
Greg, yeah, comment?
I was just going to say, my understanding of where this comes from is there were minutes from a board meeting several years ago, maybe Joe could clarify, but
which board meeting?
AFPA? At a Board of Supervisors meeting, where the Board of Supervisors did ask for some accounting or explanation of where. So I think this is a sort of a fulfillment of that request from the board for this past money that was granted. The board did provide that money, but did ask. At least it was in the minutes that Pat Blackhawk had sort of indicated that there was going to be this request for sort of a description of how that money was being used. And so I think that's where this specific 172 list coming from.
I think I have a copy of the board minutes you're referencing where Pat Blackhawk and Mardell Anderson actually took the minutes. But there, at least in those minutes, there wasn't a discussion of how 172 monies would be spent.
I don't recall exactly. But that's, I think, what Joe has referred to when he's gone to AFPA and said, you know, the Board of Supervisors wants an explanation of how the money is being spent. So,
Jake, you have anything else on this?
No, that was basically it. Just we're trying to clarify for the board that you understood what we were doing. And, if I've taken up your time, I'm sorry, but we're trying to
We're sorry we've taken up yours, too, Jake.
it's all right.
I know you got better things to be doing. I know where, too. So.
Yes.
Chief McCart, do you have anything? So our action is we can either take no action and just take this as a report from AFPA, or we can approve the expenditures as presented. What's the pleasure of the board?
I'd make a motion that we accept this as a report of how AFPA and all their entities propose to expend their existing Prop 172 balances in their district's accounts, but that this is not a ratification or pre-approval of how future Prop 172 monies, should they be dispersed, be expended.
There a second?
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'll oppose. Motion carries 5-0. Jake, thanks for getting through all this. I know.
Thank you,
Jake. I know it was painful.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Please get that verbatim, Teresa.
Repeat that motion?
No, but the recording can. I'd like the minutes to reflect it.
Okay.
That's a good one.
We're going to go on to item 14. 2013-14 proposed budget, discussion of possible action relative to approval of the subject budget. Mr. Riley.
Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased to present you with a recommended budget for this year. It has been balanced, and it does contain no layoffs. So I'm very happy to say that. It does reflect a total reduction in budgeted uses of about $350,000, which is about a 1% reduction. So we are still getting smaller. I anticipate that the difference between our expenditures and our revenues should close over the next year. So next year at this time, I hope we will be at exactly the same spot we are in right now in terms of revenues and expenditures. So,
which is
right now
the spot we're in exactly right now. We're still expending a little more than we're bringing in.
Well, the gap last fiscal year, or this fiscal year, the 12-13 fiscal year, our expenditures were about $600,000 more than revenues. But we had certain revenues that we are anticipating to creep up for the next fiscal year, and if they continue to creep up, then 14-15 will present the first balanced budget, as it were, where we are expenditures and revenues are matching.
And what's the gap this year, Chuck?
Well, at this current fiscal year, 12-13 was about $600,000.
But 13-14 is expected to be?
13-14, well, that involves a carryover, and depending on how much
expenses as compared to revenues.
You know, the way we budget, the spending authority is to spend every dollar we have. That's why we have trouble predicting that carryover. That's the way we've historically budgeted. You can't predict what that carryover is going to be. We try and refrain from spending at all, but the spending authority is there. The spending authority could draw that down to zero. And then the following year, we would have nothing to carry over. We would only have the revenues. Then revenues and expenditures would have to match.
Where do you anticipate that gap closing? In our property taxes, sales tax?
Property taxes are continuing. If they go up by another 3%, that will close that gap.
You know, question on...
Then again, we have to rely on the continued funding of the basic aid by the state, by the governor putting it in his budget.
Exactly, yes, sir. And that is included in this budget, and it while the budget hasn't been passed, it's outside of the debate over at the state legislature.
With passes, it's a shoe in.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the statement that, you know, next year we'll be able to close that gap, does that take into account the CalPERS increase in cost there?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And the smoothing that we'll talk about later, no, it doesn't anticipate that. So,
and that's about a projected $200,000 to $300,000,
yeah,
bill?
So I'm misspeaking a bit when I say that.
Are you sure that we can rely on property tax increasing by 3%?
That's next year, and that's, but for the 13-14 budget, with what you've got here, I'm very comfortable with what we've got.
Okay, because next year is an election year, so.
Understand.
But no,
unfortunately, we're going to have a room empty of people when we discuss the smoothing topic, which everybody should hear.
I'm talking about our assessor. So. That was just a little joke for our assessor. You don't have to run down here.
So if I can, real quick, the budget you've got before you includes all the changes that we discussed during the workshop, except there have been a few changes made to the promotion item that we had discussed previously. There had been a cut made to ACT, as well as a cut that had been made to the Chamber of Commerce. Those cuts that were made during the workshop have been restored. The Supervisor Forster's discretionary account has been reduced to zero to offset that, in addition to savings from our Washington lobbyists contract. which was reduced. So those two cuts were made, and the AZT and Chamber of Commerce accounts were restored.
Well, thank you, Supervisor Forster.
You're welcome. Any discussion on the budget items, old or new?
Yeah, I had a question. On the A87 allocation costs, why are some departments way down, some way up?
That's one that the auditor provides for us. So I don't know if he wants to.
Joe, do you have a very clear answer for that? I think if you understand it better than anybody else.
Jello, auditor. Let's see. That's based on the services department and their time studies. So whatever their time studies is, it'll affect their costs that are charged out through the A87. And it's done by the consult, and we have a consultant doing our plan.
There's different departments, like there's that had a. It went up a lot or down a lot, but I was looking, like, say, take the Board of Supervisors. It went from 63,000 to 480,000.
Well, let's see. County Council decided that all outside legal should be directly applied to Supervisors Department instead of spreading out through all the other departments. So that's what happened there.
Thought it was the cost of that.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, Greg.
Yeah. But he didn't feel it should be charged to spread out through the county departments, and most of his outside legal was directly through the board.
Through our decisions whether to fight a lawsuit or acquiesce one way or the other, those lawsuits all get sent to the Board of Supervisors.
I believe those are mostly affirmative cases. Litigation expenses, not
defense,
not insurance defense cases.
So that's what happened. Why it jumped up really high. That one I know.
I guess my next question is just kind of a probably a Chuck question. And imagine looking at all the charts showing how many employees are in what departments. It'd be kind of nice if you could, like the bottom of each department, especially the bigger ones, if you could put total employees, you know, from one year, the next year, the next year, the changes. Otherwise, I've got to sit there and add them all up, and
we can do that.
Yes, sir.
All right. Yeah, I'd appreciate that.
Any other questions?
Including the fraction ones, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Any more questions?
Yeah, I did have one, actually. Actually, you know what? No, I'm good.
Okay.
Right now.
Thank you, Joe. I'm going to open it up for public comment. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Tracy Towner, Director of the Amador County Recreation Agency. I have spared you my 30-minute PowerPoint presentation. I want you to know that. I really have. I want to talk to you a little bit about the cut and funding that ACRA has received over the past 2 years. It's huge in our budget. It's not so big in yours. It's a $24,000 cut. It's big. You've gone from funding the recreation agency at $5 a person to $4 a person. It's not a decision that the ACRA board made at all. It was a decision that you, as the fiscal decision makers here for the county, have made, and probably with good sound fiscal reasoning that probably had very little to do with ACRA specifically. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about ACRA specifically. It's very difficult to get the job done that we get done, and to receive a 20% cut like that is enormous on our tiny little budget. If you look at our budget is $250,000. You don't have very many departments in the county that have as many people employed and do as much as we do for $250,000. None of our budget goes to benefits, and none of our budget goes to retirement. All of our budget goes specifically to providing the services and the operations that we do in this county. Since I've been the executive director, we have employed more than 140 people in the county. 95% of those people were county people that actually made extra money working for the recreation agency. That's a lot of people. A lot of them are refs, lifeguards. I mean, you can go, but there are also staff, too. Right now, I have a staff of 3 full-time people and 4 part-time full-time people. I have a full-time maintenance man. I have a full-time programs supervisor, and there's me. We're all on furlough days except for the maintenance man, who works a full 40 hours because we have at least 60 hours worth of work to do each week, and we get it done in about 40. We also employ two free people through grants. I mean, it's not an agency that just doesn't do anything. I mean, we do a lot. So some of the things that we do, we provide 32 programs and special events each year, and that's a lot. That's staff and recreation programs, the whole nine yards. We maintain more than 100 acres of parkland. We own 80 acres. We own 87 acres actually, and we maintain the other 26 for the county. We maintain Fiddletown Park and Pioneer Park on a small contract, which was also cut 4 or 5 years ago to half. But we still continue. It's a gentleman's agreement. We still continue to maintain the park to the very best of our ability, which isn't bad. Over these years, we've served more than 30,000 people. Last year, we were able to generate enough revenue. Well, actually, we've partnered with more than 17 charitable organizations. I'm sorry, 12 charitable organizations, and generated more than $17,000 in funding for those organizations, in addition to the $17,000 that ACRA garnered. So we're helping other agencies in the county raise funds as well. I'm sure that you're aware that we're taking turf maintenance very seriously these days, and we've gotten quite a bit of training, and the training has been actually very useful to some other agencies in our local jurisdictions that are running up against the same kind of turf management issues, and we're able to share that information and be that recreation agency that those people need, that our jurisdictions need, not just the county but the rest of the cities too. I did a little study looking at this cut that we are sustaining, and the study that I did was based on some of the people that you have employed. I just took sort of their jobs and their. I just did a salary study based on my job and the couple of jobs that we have full time and a couple of part time people. If you were to operate a recreation department within the county, you'd be spending more than $350,000 a year in just staff and benefits. That would be what it is. I'm asking you for about 110 to 115, depending on what the population is, and running that agency very efficiently, I think. When ACRA staff set out to do our job, we do our job with the very best intent possible. It's been recently, but in the last 4 or 5 years, the bottom line has become very, very important to us. We operate virtually no programs on a red line basis. Every program has to pay for itself. I'm very proud of that. Last year, we came out ahead. We had more revenues to expenses, about $1,844. The year before that, we came out to about $24,000 revenues ahead of expenses. And yet, we were cut $20,000. So it's like, here, you do a good job, but we're going to cut you anyway, sorry, but keep doing that good job because we know you can do it. Well, I'm sure that we can do it. I'm sure that we, the ACRA staff, can probably make the cut that we're sustaining this year less painful. But the extra support is really, really important. What do you get for the extra support? You get an extra day's worth of work out of all of us, and there's just an easier feel in the agency. Right now, I have some brief notes. Right now, I just want you to know that you're funding us at less or equal to the very first year that ACRA was started. The first year that ACRA was begun, we were funded to the tune of about $87,000 by the Board of Supervisors only. And then we went out, and after that, then there was the membership contribution concept that everybody else started to put in the money. Being funded at that same amount now, and that was one single person. one single person and no office and very little overhead. That was it. And now we have seven people. We have an office. We have a community center. We have the 100 acres worth of parks, which is five parks, four playgrounds, four baseball fields. I mean, what we do with $110,000 isn't done anywhere else in the state. And that we would be cut to do this job is well, I understand we had to do 20% cuts across the board, but we're already cutting, and I feel like my right arm was cut off, and now I'm like walking around with my left arm, and I'm right-handed, so Chrissy, I'm having to figure everything else out.
You made it a point to mention earlier without an office and now with an office, but don't we provide that office as well?
Well, that's the thing. You do kind of provide the office, but the rent has changed since we've been there, and unbeknownst to me. I mean, usually when you have a rental agreement, that is sort of between two parties, as opposed to, oh, well, since you're not paying rent, we're going to charge you twice what we were going to charge you in the first place. When we first moved up to the Health and Human Services building, there was a contract in place that we worked with the Behavioral Health Department, and we provided prevention programs throughout the county, and we did, and it was like a $53,000 program, of which $14,400 came out for rent. That contract was pulled in, I think, 2009 because of the huge downturn that the county was seeking, and that the then behavioral health director decided that he wanted to use that $53,000 to help save a position, which I think he did. So then, there we were stuck. Not stuck like, oh gosh, we have no place to go, but there we were, and I was told at the time that was fine since the contract was pulled short. It was short of the full contract. We did not fight it. Something about winning a battle and losing the war, you know, why go to court and waste those dollars? So instead of doing that, we just said, okay, that's fine, and then we made do with the space that we have, frankly, and we continue to make that space work for us. In the CAO's email to me, he said that charge was now $24,000 a year. Certainly, if the rent has gone up $10,000, I probably should have been notified. I mean, it would just be that simple. And if the requirement for paying the rent was now something new and different, I also should have been made aware of that so that I can make good executive decisions on what we need to do as far as an agency to make sure that our tax dollars are spent as best we can. So,
we're paying, what, $4 instead of $5?
That's correct.
Per capita. How many other entities that are members of ACRA are not paying 100%?
I think the City of Jackson is actually working on their budget trying to come in at 100% this year. They came in at about 90%, 85% last year. They're working.
Is everybody's $5 per capita?
Everybody is $5 per capita.
That's the expectation anyway?
That is the expectation.
Does anybody else pay in in-kind services?
Yes. The school district pays quite a bit in in-kind services, and all of the cities allow me free use of their facilities. Yeah, we get quite a bit of in-kind services. We don't get the expert legal advice and things like that we get from county council, but we do get quite a bit from in-kind.
That all counts towards that $5?
No, sir.
Okay, well, that's fine with that.
Except for the school district, no, none of the rest of it.
Yeah, the school district doesn't contribute any money, but it's all in-kind services.
That's correct.
Who else is not paying $5 per capita?
Ione, the City of Ione, I beg your pardon, and the City of Ione is actually looking into how it is they can, I've been to their budget hearings, I've been there, I've sat there, I've waited for hours and hours and hours. This was nothing compared to some of their meetings, honestly, and they're working their way around getting ACRA some funding back. They understand, and the more their recreation issues come to the surface, bubble up to the surface, the more they realize how much ACRA can help them with some of their issues. And so they're working a little harder this year than they have been in the past, and I think they're paying a lot less in attorney fees this year, too, so I'm kind of hoping there's a balance there. But everybody else pays 100%. The City of Plymouth funds also 100% of an after-school program that we do out there, and they also contract with us for lifeguards. And so if you were talking about those kind of how much per capita, if you were talking about that would be sort of, I figured it was something to the tune of $18 per person, including those services that we provide. But it's not the same thing, so it's not the same request. It's
one's a contract and one's contributor.
Correct.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And I would really, really appreciate a reinstatement to just $5 a person. And really, when you think about it, the services that you're getting are far greater than the $5 a person that you're spending. And so because they're such great and vast, I don't know, it's hard because it's not a feel-good thing, but they're very difficult to quantify. Although I did have 30 minutes of PowerPoint that I could quantify for you. But those kind of the $5 really matters a lot to the recreation agency, not only in the fact that you're 100% supporter of the recreation agency, but also it goes to helping us feel a little bit better about what we do and a little bit more appreciated. So
that $5 per person, does that include the ones in jail?
I wish it did. It doesn't include the ones in the county jail or the state. I know, because I've sent bills, $5 a person, to the Mule Creek State Prison. because, you know, I don't see a... But I try.
The school district is all...
school districts
is... Use of services.
So. All their facilities are at our fingertips, which is really nice. And we probably use about $12,000 a year worth of their facilities to run some of our programs and generate some of our revenues. The other thing that you need to know is that we're pretty good at making money these days with the recreation agency. And your $5 last year and the year before, both years, we've been able to parlay those membership contributions and make them double in our budget so that we can go forward. So your $5 actually makes 10 real dollars, and then whatever services we can provide above and beyond that.
You know, one thing I will say, too, I had the opportunity to meet a gentleman. I believe he's your new, maintenance man, kind of do-it-all type guy, and I don't know him, never seen his work, but just everything about him just smelled like I think the guy's probably a real good employee, and Tracy seemed to back that up. He just seemed to be on it, sharp.
Oh, yeah, he's by far the best maintenance employee that we've ever had, and he is so sharp, and we're very, very blessed to have him.
Was his name like Dan Schmitz?
Dan Schmitz is his name. Okay. Yeah, he's a very fine guy. He has been working really hard with us, but also in learning the whole thing. He wasn't real familiar with, you know, irrigation and seeding and fertilizer and all that set. And that sort of...
Can you wrap up your presentation?
I can.
Because I'm sure
I'm only going to ask you one more time. Could you please, very much, I don't know where you're going to get it. I saw your budget. I read through it. I don't know how you can do it. But I figure if I can do it, you can do it. There it is, and thank you very much for your consideration. I do appreciate it.
Thank you. Mark or Maureen? Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Maureen Funk, Emmer Council Tourism. Just really briefly want to thank you for your continued support of tourism and the efforts that we make here in Amador County, and really do appreciate that you faced a very difficult budget and found a way to continue to fund one of the industries that is working very hard and getting some traction on its way out of the recession. Thank you.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mark Borchin, representing the Amador County Chamber of Commerce. On behalf of the Chamber, I thank you very much for funding us with the amount of monies that we requested and the compromises that you've had to make in doing so. And if you've noticed, our board is full. I think we have 21 seats on the board of directors that are full with people that are participating, business people in the community, and the chamber is growing and doing well. We have our first annual breakfast mixer coming up. So again, adding new events besides our evening mixers. So I hope that you all can come down to the Volcano Theater Company's Chamber Mixer. That's tomorrow, Wednesday, 5:30. They always put on a good event down there. So thank you all very much.
Thank you. Where's the mixer tomorrow?
So tomorrow's mixer is being hosted by the Volcano
Theater Amphitheater.
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 Volcano Theater Company down at the amphitheater. And then the morning mixer will be on Thursday the 27th at Jim Boy's. Yeah. Did you know they serve breakfast? Come on out at 7:30 and
I won't see you there. I'll be out of touch, but wish you luck.
All right. Thank you very much.
Any other discussion or any other public comment on the budget?
I am. Okay.
All right, board members. What we need to do is approve our preliminary proposed budget for 2013-14. And then this will come back to us in September.
Yep, that is correct.
So
for final budget. And as always with this, all revenues are equal to expenditures as required by state law.
So we have a request for a change. If so, either with or without that change, we need to make a motion here.
Well, I just want to go on record of being able to communicate to Tracy that I do value their services in the county. I've worked with Tracy on a few fundraisers over the years for other entities that I'm on, and she does show up and contribute and help not only her own entity but other entities as well. So I don't want you to feel underappreciated. That may not come through in a vote, Tracy, but I hope you heard the earlier discussion, and like I said, I'm dismayed that we're going to have a room full of, or a room empty of people when we go into this CalPERS discussion, because we're going to hear how the county is going to be hit with a between $200,000 and $300,000 bill to smooth out CalPERS requirements due to unsubstantial investment returns on all those monies, and that's going to continue for 5 years. Going into the future, and not continue as a fixed dollar amount, but continue as a percentage of the salaries that has to back up. So an additional 1.5% to 2.5% this year, compounded next year for another additional 1.5% to 2%, compounded the third year. So when you start factoring in the compounding features of adding a set percentage for the next subsequent 5 years, it is a significant hit, estimated between $1 million and $1.6 million over the next 5 years. So
not per year, but total.
Not per year, but total.
By the year five, it'll be per year.
Yeah, by year five, it'll jump to $1 million to $1.4 million
per year.
Per year, for year five. That's the compounding effect of adding this smoothing and condensing it into a five-year window rather than a 15- or 30-year window. So, you know, like I said, I wish we still had the room full of people here when we discuss this CalPERS smoothing, because the effects on our budget and our, you know, just our expenditures going forward is huge. And so, with that said, you know, I just don't know where we find those kinds of extra dollars. We've been going for some time on additional or spending more than we're taking in. We're consuming our contingencies and carry forwards as a result of that. And then to be hit with this on top of it, as well as Supervisor Forster can discuss more at length, the cancellation of our realignment monies coming from the state for our CMSP services and all that. We're not out of the woods by any means. So appreciate what you do, Tracy. I really do. And appreciate all the work that you put forth. It's just it gets down to essential services versus non-essential. And we've had to give the same answer to things like libraries and so forth. But it sounds like Maria has got something to say.
Well, as a compromise to that, I know that there are programs that Tracy has that can be funded either personally or with discretionary funds. So I know she's always got needs. I just funded one little program. It didn't cost a whole lot, but you know what? It means that she can keep operating. So there are ways we can help other than full funding in the budget, too. Any other discussion?
I
I'd just like to pigtail on back of Supervisor Plaza's in regards to Tracy. I think Tracy does a great job. I know she has a good heart, and I know she's a go-getter out there. And if it wasn't for her, I don't think ACRA would be where it is today. So thank you, Tracy. I wish we had the money. I really do. You'd get it.
I need a motion then.
I would make a motion to accept the proposed budget.
Second.
Second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The board will take a half-hour recess for lunch and then come back into session at about 12 or about 1:10.